Welcome, welcome everybody to another episode of the Shop Notes Podcast. I'm Phil with Logan and John today. It's episode number 190. Got a lot of springtime activities going on here at Woodsmith and Popular Woodworking that we're going to get you all clued into, as well as a sneak peek of a few fall events that we have coming up as well. So hope you enjoy today's show. Thanks for listening. Little word from our sponsor. You want a glue that you can trust. And fortunately, TightBond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, look to TightBond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit TightBond.com. Not a lot of comments from last week's episode.
Thank God.
Yeah. Richard Nelson says, thanks to all you guys for speaking up. It's nice to know all that's going on. Rob Payne says, enjoyable discussion. I listen to these every week. I'm a longtime subscriber too. Thanks. The subscriptions are what make the podcast possible. So there you are. I noticed today got an email for Popular Woodworking that your bandsaw video is out, Logan.
On Popwood Plus.
On Popwood Plus.
Yep. First one.
Okay.
So this is just me blabbing about the story of this bandsaw.
Well, I mean, like every shop superhero needs an origin story, right?
That's, yes, 100% accurate.
So. Yeah.
And so is Popwood Plus, I'm not familiar, is Popwood Plus behind a paywall? Is this a subscriber thing?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay. So just like Fine does their membership, we have our Popwood Plus. Basically, it gives you early access to everything. It gives you all the magazine content within the last 2 years. So as it's published, it gets put out as well. Videos before anybody else. We're rolling forward a bunch of our video content that we currently have. So we have like 950 videos on our video website. And we are putting those up for the Popwood Plus listeners.
Is this for only Popwood fans or anybody?
Yeah. No, subscribe? It's only for Popwood fans.
Okay.
Sorry. That sorry. Gone. Yep. Yep. Sorry.
Wow. All right. So I think last time when we checked in on your bandsaw, did you get the tire thing situated?
No. So we started filming some on that. Like,
right.
Because the way the VFD was originally set up is it was on the wall with an outlet. I wanted it a little bit more self-contained because I know the vertical mill is going to go back there, so I didn't want to have to walk around and you know, do all that stuff. So I have a plastic container now on the backside with the VFD in it. Okay. So I kind of talked through, you know, the electrician installed all that stuff, what got changed, whatever. And then that day while we were filming here, I said, you know, we also need to change these tires. Here's the reason. And we cut there. And I started looking at it. I'm like, man, this is a lot of work to do with everybody just standing around watching. So we will do one of them. I think we're filming next Wednesday here. So next Wednesday, we will glue the other tires on.
Okay.
Because then Colin will be here and I'll have a helping hand.
Perfect.
So, yep. And that's when we're going to do our other mini split install. So we look forward to that one because then I can keep working on my office. So.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that that was part of what was holding up the office.
Yeah, because the mini split is for out here. I have two of them for out here.
Right.
One of them is already installed and running, but the second one goes above the door to like the office and bathroom. But the plumbing for that, the plumbing being the pre-charged like refrigerant lines, those run through the ceiling and you have to connect the two together before you run out the wall. So been kind of waiting to film that and get that on video before I start drywalling the office. So once that's done, I can actually start picking up the office, which is kind of, that's my biggest hurdle in the foreseeable future. It's one of many hurdles, but it's the biggest foreseeable hurdle.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
So is that the office is the next thing on the list then?
Yeah, we have some potential video that's going to happen out here. Not for Popwood or Woodsmith. It's actually going to be some fine woodworking video, I believe.
Yeah.
And some of that video, if that happens, which I'm under the impression it's going to, I really need to get the trim finished because that's going to be a lot of like out here looking at the dust collection system. You know what I mean? So I want to get that all tidied up and cleaned up. There's nothing like a deadline to get your crap done. So. Right. We all know that.
Oh yeah. So no, I'm quite aware.
Yeah. So I think that'll be the next thing. The issue is I don't know if I have enough alder, which is disgusting to say because of how much alder I've already bought for this stupid shop.
Right. I mean, it's a small forest, really.
It's a small northern forest. But to be fair, I don't have a whole lot of like big pieces of alder I need. So the biggest thing is I have this header that wraps all the way around where the ceiling meets the walls. And I was going to wrap that in alder, but I'm thinking instead of wrapping it in hardwood alder, which is a lot of alder. I mean, it's a 2x12, you know, 160 feet of 2x12. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to order 1/4-inch alder plywood. Basically skin it with that and then put some trim on the bottom side to hide the edge. I think that'll be the easier route. The cheaper route for sure, I think.
Right. So. Yeah.
Yep. So that's kind of my plan. But, you know, crap happens.
Yep. There was a fine home building article quite a few years ago where they had a technique about using plywood to make baseboard.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, like you
rip strips of plywood and then add matching profiles to it, top and bottom, to be able to create not only a custom baseboard, but it was less expensive too than, you know, trying to do a solid white oak, you know, 6-inch base or something like that.
Yeah. Straighter probably as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Doesn't expand and contract. That's, I know a lot of the painted MDF that's kind of popular today, like the white painted or black painted trim, it's all MDF. I thought, oh, this is actually a really good idea because it doesn't expand and contract. It doesn't move. But it actually does. It just expands in every direction. So after the trim carpenters have been through and they've caulked all the joints and painted everything and whatever, but a couple years later, all those joints pop open. Ask me how I know that. So
yeah,
it's great in bathrooms too.
Yeah, yeah. It's what we call a leak detector.
Yeah,
right.
Like where that you know trim swells up really big. Yeah, that's where you know there's a leak. So,
well, it's just more economical that way because you can buy the MDF as like a 1.5-inch trim and then put it in the bathroom, and then 2 years later, it's like 2.5 inches.
That's
so.
Right. Yeah, it's just, yeah. It's inflation. Like the napkin. Yeah, it's like the napkins you unfold out of the package and throw in water or the paper towel or the washcloths. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Like a reverse shrinky dink, really, is what it is.
Yep, basically. Shrinky dinks. I forgot about those. That's one thing from my youth that my children have not found yet.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they still make those.
They did a while ago because when my kids were little, we got a shrinky dink set for like a Christmas gift or something like that. So,
yep.
But were those the things you put in the oven and they like you color them and they shrink down to?
Yeah, it was like wax. It was like waxed paper, or parchment paper, and you colored it like Mylar, basically. I guess. Right? It was like Mylar?
Yeah, I don't know because it was pretty. They were pretty rigid. It was some kind of plastic. Really? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that, and then you could get the little like tablets that you threw in water and they would expand into something. So
yeah. Like the dino pills?
Yep, exactly.
Those were not suppositories. That was a bad mistake.
I don't want to know how you found that out.
I'll just see just myself kind of wonder, out.
Like, how connections how connections get made. Just the best part was even John didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
Just that one was
that one came out of nowhere. All the listeners we got back are gone now.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, that's why we left.
Yeah.
Oh man. I feel bad for all the wives that listen to this, like with their husbands in the car. I don't feel bad for the husbands because they do it to themselves. But
yeah. So speaking of Alder, we were working on a TV show project this week, mm-hmm. Harvest Table from Woodsmith from the Wayback Machine, which I had never seen the original one, just saw photos of it in the magazine from back then. And it always seemed like kind of an interesting project in terms of its styling. And then when we were looking for projects for this season of the TV show, I brought this one up and everybody seemed to like it and give it a shot. So it's kind of a country style table. And we were decided to choose alder for the base because it's easy to work with, kind of a light material.
Inexpensive.
And I did the legs and the base for this part of the show. And I added some carved details to enhance the profile that we used and showed in the magazine. And it was just, we haven't had alder in a while. And turns out it's still awesome. I still love it.
Speak for yourself. I have so much alder all the time. But it is. It's nice.
You did a turned version of the legs. And the blank that you had was alder as well.
Yeah. Yep. No, alder's nice. I find it's interesting, and I know this from the sawmilling world, but like the thicker and the longer the stock you get, generally the higher quality it is.
Mm.
Because it takes a whole lot straighter tree to make a 20-foot long board versus a 6-foot board, right? But I also find that they generally reserve higher grade saw logs for 8-quarter lumber than they do 4-quarter lumber. So like you order alder 4-quarter, it's gonna look like the stuff behind me. There's gonna be knots all over it. Well, of course everything behind me is clean, but like there's gonna be knots and stuff, and it's, you know, it's knotty alder. You can pay for premium, but you're paying like the 8-quarter price just about. So
right.
It's a beautiful wood to work with. They call it the poor man's cherry, which got a lot of it because I can't afford cherry.
Yeah. And then we ended up using it for an upcoming project in the magazine. There's Chris designed a sideboard that was inspired by a Japanese style sideboard that he had seen. And Steve just got done with that this week, and I think that turned out really cool. It's just, you know, works with the really clean lines because there's a grain pattern to it, but it's not real contrasty. So
yeah, it's not like
nice.
An oak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very subtle.
And then speaking of oak, the top of this table that we were working on is pin oak that you had milled. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how long ago you had milled it even, so.
Well, okay, actually, I didn't mill it.
Oh, you didn't?
These two pin oak trees that I have milled here they were too large for my sawmill. Pin oak is, I was telling somebody, I don't remember who I was telling, maybe it was video crew. Pin oak's like, it's like the weed of the oak family. Like, it grows anywhere. It grows really fast. It grows really straight. But it's like this weird love child of a evergreen and a oak because it has a lot of branches really low.
Hmm.
So, but there's this great big trunk, and then it's almost like, you know, conifers grow with whorls. That's kind of what pin oaks grow like a little bit. I had a buddy that was taking two of these pin oaks down. One of them had fallen on somebody's house and they had to use a crane to get it off the house.
Wow.
Just uprooted the entire thing. It was a windstorm that we had in Des Moines. And then the other one had fallen in this couple's backyard, through their backyard, through their neighbor's backyard, and into the third condo's backyard.
Wow.
And they were much, much too large for me to saw. I mean, they were every bit of, you know, 46, 47 inch diameter. Like, they were wow. big.
Okay.
And so I had my buddy Russ Wilkins from here in Des Moines. He has a swing blade mill, which is basically a circular saw that rides on a track above the log. And then every pass, you rotate the blade 90 degrees. So you cut down, you know, horizontally or vertically. Then you, coming back, you cut vertically or you cut vertically, then horizontally. So you're basically ripping boards off.
Okay.
Which is, it's a really efficient way to quarter saw, super efficient way. It's probably the most efficient way to quarter saw a log. So a lot of this oak that I got is quarter sawn. So I paid Russ to saw these two logs all into 2-inch thick stock, roughly 6 inches wide or so, maybe 7 or 8. And he left me the two centerpieces as, like, you know, slabs, like tabletop type slabs. And they're massive. I wasn't real sure what the purpose of this pin oak was, like what the final purpose was, because it's not a high grade furniture wood, and it's not super durable. I cut it kind of to use as trailer decking, but it's not a durable trailer decking. I was honestly, all the tree huggers could shut their ears right now. I was going to douse it in diesel and motor oil to to give it a little bit of resistance, you know, mm-hmm. but, yeah, I mean,
poor man's pressure treating.
Yeah.
Poor man's creosote.
Yeah, poor man's creosote. That's exactly what it was. But that was my intent with this oak, was to do that. But when we started looking at it, I'm like, well, I got some pin oak. I don't know what it looks like. It's part of the red oak family. And it does. It looks like red oak, but it grows so quickly that the growth rings are really spread out. Like, there's some of those pieces, the growth rings are, you know, 1/2 inch to 3/4 inch apart.
Yeah.
So it grows really quick, really prominent grain, but it's perfect for that table style. Like, I was, you know, John did a great job bringing that crap I brought in and getting a nice looking top out of it.
Yeah. I was sweating carrying that.
They're heavy.
And,
yeah.
And flattening it all. And
Yeah,
because the boards were like, what, 2 inches thick and
like 14 feet long, or
yeah,
12 yeah, 13 and a half. Yeah, 13 and a half. And they looked like they dried fairly flat, at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, a 13 foot long board is going to have some form of bow and cup in it, but they looked like they behaved pretty well. So, yeah.
So what was it like milling it, John?
Oh, I don't know. Like I said, it was, I mean, mostly the heft of moving it around or whatever. And then, like you said, most of it was pretty flat because it's quarter sawn and whatnot. And I cut it down to 5-6 foot lengths. So mm-hmm. I took most of the bow out of it. So, but I was going down from 2 inches to 1.5 inches. So I had plenty of meat there to yep. flatten it all out. And emptied the dust collector a few times along the way. So,
our video crew noted that they thought it smelled really bad.
Yeah, it had a little of that swampy oak stink to it.
It was like, I said I thought it kind of had like an acrid smell. Like it almost was like acidic smelling or something. Yeah. I don't know. It was. I've noticed cherry does that too. Cherry kind of gets a vinegar smell to it.
Oh.
This was like oak with a little hint of vinegar.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Maybe it was all that diesel fuel you soaked in.
It must have been the creosote.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of which, my buddy Russ that milled these for me, I showed up one day and like he has a cool property. He was an old tree farmer. He had a Christmas tree farm. So like his sawmill's like down the hill through his evergreen farm. And like you're driving through it, and then there's just this little A-frame with a sawmill underneath, and there's a bunch of logs stacked and whatever. And I drove down there one day, and I saw he was like wearing full respirator and stuff. I get out, I'm like, "What are you doing?" And Russ is not what I call a spring chicken. I mean, he's mid 70s, but I'm like, "What are you doing, Russ?" And He was milling creosote treated phone poles. And it smelled so, as soon as I opened my door, I knew exactly what he was doing. Like, it just stunk so bad.
Wow.
And I mean, they were beautiful Douglas fir, like beautiful Douglas fir. The guy he got them from brought them in from like Wyoming or something. But God, it was nasty. And that creosote goes like 2 inches deep. So you had to cut through like 2 inches to get into clean, untreated lumber. Nasty. I don't think I would ever mess with it.
Little word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Titebond. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, Titebond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, look to Titebond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit Titebond.com. All right, so how goes the miter saw station?
It's getting there. I got both cabinets built. I built the base of one. So I'm doing these in a two-part section where you got the cabinet bases, or you got the cabinet, so like the sides and the face frame styles and rails and whatever. And then you got like the toe kick is a separate just rectangular base. And I like that two-part construction because then you can just level that base and then set the cabinet box on top of it, right? I have both cabinets built. I have the base of one of them built. I had the base of the other built, but it was 3 inches too short. So somebody mismeasured. I went to public school. Yeah, I went to public school. So public school math. So I actually... I tore it apart and I glued those together to as a turning blank for the leg I was going to turn for the TV show until I realized that John had one glued up already. So now I have a 4x4 of poplar sitting here. So we're close. I put it on a pause this week because I got to a point where I realized that I actually needed my drawer slides to start building drawer boxes. So I have a total of 6 drawers, and then I have what are going to be 2 large pullouts. So think of like a pullout for like pots and pans style. Yeah. So I had ordered 12 sets of drawer slides, I think, maybe 10, and then hinges and stuff. So I'm kind of on pause right now. I could paint the drawer boxes. I've been kind of waiting till it gets a little bit nicer out. And especially next week, Colin is here. So I'm going to maybe, step outside and paint those with the sprayer and have him do some photos while I'm doing that. Okay. Cause I want to do it like a high end paint finishing article, with this. So yeah, I'm getting there. Looks good. It looks really good. I only had two pairs of domino holes that went in the wrong spot. So I got to plug those. But yeah, I was telling you, I think this week, Phil, working with poplar is just, it's so nice. Like, it's not as soft and stringy as basswood.
Right.
But it is still soft enough that as I'm chiseling, like, you know, grooves square, it's like I don't have to use a mallet. Just push on the chisel and it works. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, it does ding pretty easily. I've dinged up a few areas on it that I need to, like, you know, get some hot water on before I paint them and expand them out and, you know, take care of those. But yeah, I did 1/2 inch MDF for side panels, which worked really nicely. The drawers and doors are going to be cherry frames and painted panels. So a little different. Which means that I have to kind of pre-finish everything.
Okay.
Before I glue it up and assemble it and stuff, which is fine. So yeah,
which is what we always tell people to do.
It's what we always preach. We just never practice. So yeah, so I'm working on it. Yep. I made the decision probably last week or 2 weeks ago that this is not going to be in the upcoming issue. It's going to be in the next issue. So takes a little of the pressure off and actually gets me ahead a little bit. So that's pretty nice. It's more so that I'm looking around, and I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and realizing I don't have any storage in here, so I need those drawers and stuff. That was really the crux of it. So
you just have an open concept for storage right now in your shop.
Yeah, everything's out in the open, and it drives me nuts.
So. And the random cardboard boxes. And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There are lots of those.
So how far along are you on the migration from inside basement shop to this shop?
Philosophically, I would like to say that I don't need anything that's in that shop right now. I have survived out here for months now without any of it.
Okay.
Occasionally, I'll run in and grab something that's like, okay, that's in the basement shop. So philosophically, like, I could do without any of it. So I would like to say I could just get rid of it all. But there's stuff in there that I just don't want to get rid of. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So that room right now looks like what I imagine an abandoned storage unit looks like 40 years after it's been abandoned. Okay. There is crap all over. There is sawdust all over. I have a lot of turning parts and turning kits down there. I still have a lumber rack on the wall, which is something I haven't really figured out where I'm going to put my lumber in this shop. I think it's going to go in the cold storage side. So it's a work in progress.
Okay.
As soon as I clear that out, that means that I have to turn that into a theater room for my kids. So I'm just leaving stuff in there as long as I can to avoid that. That's what I'm telling myself.
All right. All right.
But yeah, there are a few like larger items in there that I don't. The last tool that was in there was the drill press, and that's out here. I have that wall-mounted tambour door tool cabinet. I bought the one from our video studio that was unfinished, and I finished it, and that was hung down there. That's in there. The old Woodsmith sawtill is in there.
Right.
I have one of the Shop Notes clamp racks in there. I have the base of that carved trim tool cabinet that I started.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just like all of those things. It's like they're big. I don't know what to do with them. I might just post them for free on Facebook. Like, hey, if somebody wants to come grab these, I'll probably actually send them to the Des Moines Woodworkers. And say if somebody wants to come grab them, please take them. It's just I don't have need for any of those out here. I have a desire for a different like tool cabinet base now, so that one's kind of a lot of walnut on it, but
yeah
a lot of little random things like my biscuit joiners down there, my my doweling jig and all the its accessories are down there. You know, just bleh. Mm-hmm. All of the stupid stuff that I've bought just for little hyperfixations I have. I have like a full setup for like doing nickel plating.
Okay.
That's sitting down there.
All right.
I don't know.
With all the inflation, it's dime plating now, right?
I know, yeah. Right? Yeah. Maybe I'll send some of this stuff with Colin next week. Maybe that's what I'll do. Make sure you bring your Jeep down.
And with several totes.
Just to fill it up. Mm-hmm. But then, as we said before the podcast started, I'm going to pick up a couple of other things this weekend. So,
one of those things being a milling machine that you said you would never get.
Well, I didn't say I would never get it. I just said I was avoiding it.
Right.
I wasn't very good at avoiding it.
Mm-hmm. Hit you dead on.
Yeah.
Although I will say that for a milling machine,
it's small.
It's perfect for you, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the sense that I think part of the reason you had been avoiding a milling machine was you had Bridgeport in your head.
Yeah.
And then at the time, I was thinking like you either have a Bridgeport, which is humongous, or you end up with a small benchtop mill.
A Chinese one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the one that Chris got.
Yeah.
But instead, you found kind of the sweet spot right in the middle of being a stationary tool, but is probably, I don't know what, like two-thirds, half they, to two-thirds
they call it
the size?
A three-quarter size is what they call it.
Oh, three-quarter. Okay.
They call it a three-quarter size mill. I have the sales brochure for it that we can put on the show notes page. We'll, we'll at least link to it because it's on Vintage Machinery. Yeah, yeah, it's like it's a U.S. It's a U.S. machinery and tool company mill. I think it was made in the 40s. I think it was the U.S. machinery company was sold to Burke, B-U-R-K-E Milling, and they sold it as a U.S. machine mill. So, I have the catalog for it. It's like a two-thirds size, a 36-inch table. So there's 36 inches of table. You know, variable speed power feed on it on the head, not power table feed. It's perfect. It's like the perfect, like, it's 1,850 pounds, I think. So it's, you know, it's heavy, but it's not like that heavy.
Yeah.
Like John and I could lift it, you know,
for sure.
But yeah, it's, I mean, it's going to be fun. It's just one of those things that it's not costing me a ton. Okay. I'm getting it from a friend that, he is just happy that somebody's going to take it. That's going to appreciate it and use it.
Right.
So it's just one of those things that I'm going to dink around with. My hyperfixation lately has been on, I'm back on the stupid bamboo fly rod thing for some reason. Like I've talked about building a bamboo fly rod for a long time.
Right.
And you know what it was? It was somebody in Des Moines here had a bunch of fly or of rod building tools for sale. They were like high end ones that I wouldn't buy them. Cause they're asking a lot for them because they are really nice tools.
Right.
But I was watching a bunch of YouTube videos the other night on bamboo fly rod building. So it's like, you know, splitting the bamboo and planing them. And Lee Nielsen has the bamboo block plane, the bamboo fly rod block plane in stock right now.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was looking at it, trying to figure out all these things. Long story short, fly rod builders use a lot of very, very highly precise specialty jigs.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at like the tapering jig to taper the cane is like, they're like $1,000.
Yeah.
Cause they're like highly machined steel and very precise and stuff. I'm like, I could just mill it, you know, and just make it. And then I don't have to worry about it. And so right. It's like that type of stuff. Like it's stupid things like that, that I just want to dig around with.
Yeah. So you're really saving money.
Yeah, basically. That's what I told my wife. Yeah, she like did not see it that way, but
no. No. That's weird.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a reflection upon her, not myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it is kind of interesting how, you know, there's a lot of tool buying advice in the woodworking world where it's like, don't buy X until you need it rather than having it. Or don't buy, you know, like router bits, for example, yeah, or something like that. However, I think there's also a case to be made for, and this goes to buying lumber too, where it's like tools of opportunity instead of tools for opportunity.
Yes.
The charitable organization, tools of opportunity is like, I would really like this someday, but this is a really good deal and it's tough to pass up.
Well, and yeah, I actually sold a router table top lift a couple of weeks back, and the kid that came out and bought it, he's like, he worked for a construction company. He's like, you know, it's in the middle. He's like, we're just came out of winter. He's like, my hours get cut during winter. I really shouldn't buy it, but God, the price was just too perfect that I can't. And I was like, hey man, yeah, strike when the iron's hot. You're preaching to the choir here. Like, you don't have to explain yourself to me at all.
He was just getting a story straight for when he got home.
Well, and it's funny, I always tell people, like during my classes, it's like, hey, if you guys need doctor notes for buying tools, you let me know. Like, I will write them. Mm-hmm.
Prescription.
Yes. but no, I agree. If you know yourself at a level, you know, if you know that you at some point will buy X, Y, or Z, and an opportunity presents itself where the deal is too good to pass up, you just got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, does it mean that you won't be able to retire for 15 more years? Yeah, that's fine. I don't care. So it's just, you know.
We're already
doing
what we do when we were retired anyways.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, the walnut, a perfect example, Phil, when you said, you know, lumber, the walnut that I built my son's crib out of, probably, God, it would have been almost 11 years ago now, that I bought from a guy in Waterloo, Iowa, so a two-hour drive, but he was asking $2 a board foot for it. This is before I had a sawmill.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's all one tree, and there was like 800 board feet. And I'm like, I can't pass that up. It was short stuff. It was like all 6.5, 7 foot. But I'm like, I can't pass that up. Because it was, what was his name? Bill, I think. Bill was like, he's like, I want somebody to take it all. $2 a board foot, entire lot. And I said, I'll come get it. So,
yeah.
You know, hindsight, that was a really, really good lumber purchase. So,
yeah. Now, I always hesitate to sometimes do this sort of thing, but this fall, we have a lot going on.
Oh, God.
We have a lot going on anyway, but we have a lot going on-er.
Yep.
This fall. Starting in September, there's going to be a Woodsmith Popular Woodworking woodworking tour to England.
Mm-hmm.
That will be coming out, the details of that, in an email inbox near you pretty soon. So it'll be, what is it, 8 days, I think?
Yep, 8 days. Mm-hmm. And there is a limited number of tickets available. Mm-hmm. So we are capping it at like 25 or 30 people. So basically a few of us will be going and taking this tour group and visiting woodworking stuff in England. So yep. Flying into London, traveling around, tour bus
seeing
style.
Some makers.
Yep.
Some way lumber is made.
Yep.
Kind of a tool visit to a forest. Tool manufacturers, yep. Museums. Yep. That yep. kind of thing. So,
it'll be fun. It'll be yeah. fun. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be a lot of stress, but it will be cool. This kind of comes off of the heels of success that our gardening magazine has had doing garden tours like this, where they put together tour groups and they visit a country and they go to a bunch of gardens in that country. And they have had really good success with that. People, most of their customers end up being repeat customers, and enough so that they've had to add a bunch of tours during the year to get new people to be able to go. So, you know, at the end of the day, it is still a European trip. So it's not a cheap trip, but, for what it is, you know, hotels included, there's several meals included. We'll do some group dinners, you know, breakfast every day at the hotels and stuff like that. It'll be cool. So that will be fun.
Yeah. So you want to check
spouses,
out
spouses? Yeah. Spouses will be welcome. If you need a doctor's note, Phil or I will write it.
Right. Yeah. So. Yep. And then the other one is like exactly a month later, we'll be doing a live event here in Des Moines. If anybody remembers way back before times, in 2019, we did the Woodsmith Workshop at Living History Farm. So we're going to build off of that and do another event here in town. Still working on the venue, but we have one in mind that I think will be super cool and add some fun to the whole thing. But this one, it'll be really cool because it'll be inclusive of everybody. So fine woodworking, popular woodworking, Woodsmith, Shop Notes. We'll have people there from all of the titles, a number of guest speakers and presenters and stuff like that for a get together. I think the last one, it was like right after we got popular woodworking. So
it was.
Yeah.
Not just wood, to be clear. Not Wood Magazine, though. They are
I was
not
say,
welcome.
Just to be clear, Wood
don't
is not
show
here.
Up.
Talk to you, Lucas.
Stay on your side of town.
Yeah.
So anyway, we like those guys.
We do. It's just fun to. It's kind of a crosstown high school rivalry sort of thing. So.
Yeah. But no, so that'd be cool. So yeah, we did our one here. That we did at Living History Farms. We had myself and you, Phil, and Chris, and then we had George Von Driska from the Woodworkers Guild of America. We had Ann Briggs, Ann of All Trades. Matt Corona came down, and James Hamilton, Stumpy Nubs. We all did basically 2 days of classes and seminars and stuff like that. And we heard from everybody that came that everybody loved it. Everybody asked when we're doing it again. Well, here it is. Yep. We're going to, without committing ourselves fully, the idea being that we will do several of these next year, maybe in different locations. So,
yeah.
You know, our Midwest one here kind of is our hometown, you know, it's our home field advantage, but you know, we may look at trying to do one on the East Coast, do one on the West Coast. So we'll see how this one goes. We need everybody's help to make it a success though. So it'll be fun though. We enjoy having people out. You know, it's a lot of work for us. It is a ton of work. All of these things, like the trips, the events, like everything is a lot of work to us or for us. But when it gets down to it, like the days of, they're so fun. Mm-hmm. Like they are. Yeah, they're a blast. And we have we have more fun than anybody does. So we might bellyache and moan about them, but they're fun.
So anyway, just like I said, keep an eye out for that kind of stuff. The promotions will be starting up pretty soon, but just kind of block out some time for one or both of those events and look forward to seeing people again. So anyway, I think that wraps up another episode of the Shop Notes podcast. Thanks to everybody who's been listening and commenting on the show, and also for the people who write and rate us at your local podcastery. Helps us to get more exposure to other woodworkers. Special thanks to Typon for sponsoring today's episode. It's the glue we use in the shop here every day. Multiple flavors, all the applications that you're looking for. Check it out at typon.com. Questions, comments, or smart remarks? We want to hear about them. Put it on the YouTube channel in the comments section, or send us an email, woodsmith@woodsmith.com. Thanks, everybody. Bye.